Hi, I'm Becky Burrows, and you are listening to Leadership Becomes Her, where I provide simple, strategic solutions for Christian women who lead. In today's episode, I'm going to paint a picture of what it looks like when you use the signals that fear is sending you to help you make good decisions versus what it looks like when you let fear make your decisions for you. Specifically, we're going to explore what that might look like in your leadership. So I want to begin with some questions for you to consider. Is fear preventing you from having the hard conversations that are necessary for growth in your organization? Is your fear of not pleasing your boss or the people you serve in your ministry diluting your innovative ideas? Are you a leader who allows fear to keep you stuck? Are you unable to move forward and do what you know needs to be done? Are you doing what fear is telling you to do? Let's dive in to today's episode. Hey, friend, are you a people-pleasing, conflict-avoiding leader? Is your secret relationship with fear affecting your leadership decisions? Do you want to learn how to build credibility and confidence or to navigate difficult conversations? Do you long to manage your time without sacrificing your family or self-care? Welcome to Leadership Becomes Her. I'm Becky Burrows, your host and a minister and life and leadership coach with over 50 years' experience in leadership. Now, I firmly believe God has given you everything you need to lead well. You have the toolbox. You just need to learn how to use the tools. So get comfy or start a mindless task. You know how to pause or rewind if you need to. Let's get started. So in episode 4, entitled, What is Your Relationship with Fear?, I talk about the purpose of fear. Now, if used correctly, fear can become your valued partner, one that reminds you of what you need to do to feel good about a task and not fear taking that risk, versus when you have made fear your boss by allowing it to tell you what to do so that it can keep you stuck and firmly planted in your comfort zone. I even suggested a series of questions for you to ask yourself so that you can determine if the fear is warranted or not. I gave a couple of examples in that episode. I have another example for you. Let's say you are a children's minister or a student minister, and you have some fear around asking for input into your ministry. I had a minister, he was actually a student minister, tell me once that he didn't believe in asking for input from members or stakeholders, because once they provide the input, they will expect you to follow their suggestions. But the reality is that input is merely someone's opinion that, when asked for, can help you make a decision. How you ask for input can influence their expectations about you following their advice. So let's say your boss has suggested you ask for input regarding the future direction of your ministry. But now you have some fear around those conversations to the point that you're trying to figure out how not to have them. So instead of chickening out, ask yourself some questions. I'm going to give you some to help you think of questions of your own, but these are just my perspective. They're just my input. For example, do I even see the value of input, or do I like to make all decisions about my ministry in a vacuum? Do I think I can carefully select those from whom I desire input? Will I base input on those who are invested in my ministry, like parents of the children I serve, or parents of children who consistently come to Bible class, or who participate in activities, or maybe my trusted volunteers? Will I base input on those parents who serve or are involved in my ministry? Will I get a cross sample of younger and older parents, parents of one child and multiple children? Will I have conversations with some of the different ethnic groups represented to get their perspective? Will I talk to parents who have been around a long time, as well as new families? Will I make sure to include those for whom some of my proposed activities might be too expensive? Will I take care to talk to parents who not only have children in my ministry, but also in student ministry, to see if there are any challenges being a part of both programs? Am I prepared with a way to document the responses? Whatever questions you come up with, you want your questions to suggest that you have covered all of your bases, so that asking for input will be a learning exercise for you. The goal of getting input is so that you can make the best, most informed decision regarding the future of your ministry. So that if you ask yourself those questions and you can answer yes to all of them, you'll know that fear is not necessary. Thank you, fear, for being a valued partner. You don't need fear anymore. You've got this. You are prepared to ask for input. But when you ask yourself these questions and the answer is no on at least one of them, you can conclude that fear has protected you from jumping into a task you're not ready for. You will know what you need to do to get ready, to get the most out of this experience of asking for input. Now, sometimes fear is less about what we're about to do and more about who we are. I meet women in ministry all the time who have been called to ministry after working in another discipline, women who have degrees in education, accounting, art, speech therapy, physical therapy, theater, and sales, women with multiple degrees in these disciplines, as well as years of experience. But somewhere along the way, the Lord calls them into ministry, and they are keenly aware of the limitations or perceived limitations of their education, their experience, or their expertise, and every church is different. They find themselves in a male-dominated field that has its own rules, its own jargon, its own expectations, and they quickly find out that each church has its own twist on church governance. In some churches, the leadership, the elders are deeply involved in decision-making. In other churches, committees within the eldership have responsibilities of oversight over particular ministries. Some churches have ministers that answer to the deacons. In other churches, the deacons have no authority but are present to be a support to the ministers. Still, other ministers work in churches with a lead minister and an executive minister who have been given tremendous responsibility for church operation by the elders. So part of the steep learning curve for a woman coming into ministry, especially as a second career, is to learn about the system of governance in their particular church. At the same time, they are learning that ministry is about people more than tasks. Yet, somehow, they must figure out how to get the tasks done, often without administrative help, on limited budgets, and with never enough volunteers. I've been in many coaching sessions with women who wonder whether their past brings any value to their present. They secretly feel less than, not qualified to speak up for fear that they don't know enough to have an opinion. They wonder if others think they don't know what they're talking about because they're not officially trained in ministry. And even for those women with a degree in ministry, it is no different than when you get a degree in anything and you graduate thinking you know everything, and then you get your first job and you quickly feel like you know nothing. So it's understandable that when we move into our new office at the church building, one of the first things we unpack is fear. But if we're not careful, fear can quickly go from being your valued partner that is reminding you to be prepared, or that friend who is keeping you safe because you're not prepared, to your boss who is making your decisions for you. Now, I have described mainly with examples what it looks like when fear is your valued partner or your friend. But what does it look like when fear is your boss? Specifically, what does it look like when you are in a leadership position and fear is your boss? Or, put another way, what does it look like to lead with fear? What does it look like when a leader is making fear-based decisions? It's a little like watching paint dry. Very little changes, very little growth is happening. The status quo rules because of the fear of what would happen if there was change. There is a strong emphasis on pleasing others, what we call people-pleasing. We make decisions based on making others happy. We keep things the same so as not to rock the boat in an attempt to make others happy. We keep long-standing programs that are no longer working or not in keeping with the vision because it would make others unhappy if we changed anything. We honor long-standing icons because of the importance they have for some. Fear-based leaders don't ask hard questions. They don't challenge. They don't exercise their leadership voice. But you know what? One of the common traps of the enemy is to keep us paralyzed by fear. You know that. But the enemy also has another tool that is just plain sneaky. That is to make us think we are doing what God has asked of us. The Bible is full of stories of leaders who took action they thought God would be pleased with, only to find out they had missed the mark. Cain, Sarah, Moses, Saul, David, Rebecca, Martha, Joseph, the Pharisees, the Sadducees. For women in ministry, a trap the enemy uses is the superwoman complex, that idea that I must work harder than everyone else and do it all to perfection. Never mind that I feel stretched too thin, that I have difficulty turning off my mind at night, that I feel like a failure, that I have a hard time saying no, that I feel stressed body and soul, and that I have completely abandoned self-care. I don't question, I don't challenge, I don't rock the boat, I don't use my leadership voice. Is it possible that instead of using my leadership skills, my experience, my talents given by God, and the conviction of my calling to lead with confidence in myself and in God who has gifted me, instead of using my leadership voice, instead of owning the role that the Lord has placed me in, instead of walking right out of my comfort zone and taking risks and doing the things that are uncomfortable for me because God is calling me to it, I choose to busy myself with tasks and hard work and perfection. Here's my challenge to you. Think about this. Think about the role that fear might be playing in your leadership, in this call from the Lord that you have committed to. And ask yourself, what is this costing you? Is it your physical health, your mental health, your important relationships, your sleep? What is the fear driving these choices you are making? Then dig into the Word and search for the truth that God tells us will counteract that fear. God is faithful. Whatever He is calling you to, He is equipping you for. You just have to step out in faith. My next leadership boot camp for women in ministry starts in April of 2024, and it fills up fast. Go to our website, leadershipbootcampforwomeninministry.com, to learn more. If you'd like to get on the wait list for the one in April, email me at hello@beckyburrows.com. I want to help you build a solid foundation upon which your leadership can stand tall. Hey, let's do this again next week. It is my prayer that this podcast inspired you, blessed you, or made you think. If so, please share it with a friend, subscribe, and please leave a review. Hey, I want to connect with you. Follow me on Facebook, Instagram, and LinkedIn. Send me a DM or email me at hello@beckyburrows.com. If you are a Christian woman who leads and you are interested in one of my leadership boot camps for women in ministry, this is a 4-week workshop, or becoming part of a Kairos cohort, year-long group coaching, send me a DM or an email for more information. We'll talk soon.